Now, Sandy.
In the shed, there was a sallow flash, so pale it was almost lilac. It was followed by darkness, then another flash, then more darkness. Darkness this time unbroken. Is it done? Huddy asked, then answered his own question. Yeah, I think it is. Ned ignored this. What? He asked me. What did he say then? What any man says when things are all right at home, I told him. He said he was a lucky man. Steph had gone away to mind her microphone and computer screen, but the others were still here. Ned took no notice of any of them. His puffy red-lidded eyes never left me. Did he say anything else? Said you hit two homers against the Roxburgh Railroad the week before, and that you gave him a wave after the second one while you were coming around third. He liked that. Laughed telling me about it. He said you saw the ball better on your worst day than he ever had on his best. He also said you needed to start charging ground balls if you were serious about playing third base. The boy looked down and began to struggle. We looked away, all of us, to let him do it in reasonable privacy. At last, he said, he told me not to be a quitter. But that's what he did with that car. That fucking 8. He quit on it. I said, he made a choice. There's a difference. He sat, considering this, then nodded. All right. Archie said, this time I'm really going home. But before he went, he did something I'll never forget. He leaned over and put a kiss on Ned's swollen cheek. I was shocked by the tenderness of it. Good night, lad. Good night, Archie. We watched him drive away in his rattletrap pickup, and then Huddy said, I'll drive Ned home in his Chevy. Who wants to follow along and bring me back here to get my car? I will, Ed said. Only I'm waiting outside when you take him in. If Michelle Wilcox goes nuclear, I want to be outside the fallout zone. It'll be okay, Ned told him. I'll say I saw the can on the shelf and picked it up to see what it was and maced my stupid self. I liked it. It had the virtue of simplicity. It was exactly the sort of story the boy's father would have told. Ned sighed. Tomorrow bright and early I'll be sitting in the optometrist chair over at Statler Village. That's the downside. Won't hurt you, Shirley said. She also kissed him, planting hers on the corner of his mouth. Good night, boys. This time everyone goes and no one comes back. Amen to that, Huddy said, and we watched her walk away. She was 45 or so, but there was still plenty to look at when she put her backfield in motion, even by moonlight, especially by moonlight. Off she went, driving past us, a quick flick of right back at you and then nothing but the taillights. Darkness from Shed B. No taillights there. No fireworks either. It was over for the night, and someday it would be over for good. But not yet. I could still feel the sleepy beat of it far down in my mind. A tidal whisper that could be words if you wanted them to be. What I'd seen. What I'd seen when I had the boy hugged in my arms. Him blinded by the spray.
You want to ride along, Sandy? Huddy asked. Nah, I guess not. I'll sit here a while longer, then get on home. If there are any problems with Michelle, you have her call me, here or at the house. Makes no difference.
There won't be any problems with Mom, Ned said.
What about you? I asked.
There going to be any more problems with you? He hesitated, then said, I don't know. In some ways, I thought it was the best answer he could have given. He had to give him points for honesty. They walked away, Huddy and Ned, heading toward the Bel Air. Eddie split apart from them, going toward his own car and pausing long enough at mine to take the Kojak light off the roof and toss it inside. Ned stopped at the rear bumper of his car and turned back to me.
Sandy?
What is it?
Didn't he have any idea at all about where it came from? What it was? Didn't any of you?
No,
We'd blue-skied it from time to time, but no one ever had an idea that felt like the real deal, or even close. Jackie O'Hara probably nailed it when he said the Buick is like a jigsaw piece that won't fit into the puzzle anywhere. You worry it, and you turn it this way and that, try it everywhere. And one day you turn it over and see the back is red, and the backs of all the pieces in your puzzle are green. Do you follow that? No, he said. Well, think about it, I said, because you're going to have to live with it. How am I supposed to do that? There was no anger in his voice. The anger had been burned away. Now all he wanted was instructions. Good. You don't know where you came from or where you're going, do you? I asked him. But you live with it just the same. Don't rail against it too much. Don't spend more than an hour a day shaking your fists at the sky and cursing God. But there are Buicks everywhere, I said. Steph came out after they were gone and offered me a cup of coffee. I told her, thanks, but I'd pass. I asked her if she had a cigarette. She gave me a prim look, almost shocked, and reminded me she didn't smoke, as though that was her toll booth, one with the sign reading, All Buick Roadmasters must detour beyond this point. Man, if we lived in that world. If only. Are you going home? She asked. Shortly. She went inside. I sat by myself on the smoker's bench. There were cigarettes in my car, at least a half a pack in the glove box, but getting up seemed like too much work, at least for the moment. When I did get up, I reckoned it would be best just to stay in motion. I could have a smoke on the way home and a TV dinner when I got in. The country way would be closed by now, and I doubted Cynthia Garris would be very happy to see my face in the place again soon anyway. I'd given her a pretty good scare earlier. Her fright nothing to mine when the penny finally dropped and I realized what Ned was almost certainly planning to do. And my fear then was only a shadow of the terror I'd felt as I'd looked into that rising purple glare with the boy hanging blind in my arms and that steady beat, beat, beat in my ears, a sound like approaching footfalls. I had been looking both down, as if into a well, and on an up-tilted plane, as if my vision had been split by some prismatic device. It had been like looking through a periscope lined with lightning. What I saw was very vivid. I'll never forget it. And fabulously strange. Yellow grass, brownish at the tips, covered a rocky slope that rose before me and then broke off at the edge of a drop. Green-backed beetles bustled in the grass, and off to one side there grew a clump of those waxy lilies. I hadn't been able to see the bottom of the drop, but I could see the sky. It was a terrible, engorged purple, packed with clouds and ripe with lightning. A prehistoric sky. In it, circling in ragged flocks, were flying things, birds maybe, or bats like the one Kurt had tried to dissect. They were too far away for me to be sure, and all this happened very quickly, remember. I think there was an ocean at the foot of that drop, but I don't know why I think it, perhaps only because of the fish that came bursting out of the Buick's trunk that time. Or the smell of salt. Around the Roadmaster, there was always that vague, teary smell of salt. Lying in the yellow grass, close to where the bottom of my window, if that's what it was, ended, was a silvery ornament on a fine chain. Brian Lippi's swastika. Years of being out in the weather had tarnished it. A little further off was a cowboy boot, the fancy stitched kind with a stacked heel. Much of the leather had been overgrown with black-gray moss that looked like spider webs. The boot had been torn down one side, creating a ragged mouth through which I could see a yellow gleam of bone. No flesh. 20 years in the caustic air of that place would have decayed it, though I doubt the absence of flesh was due to mere decay alone. What I think is that Eddie J's old school pal was eaten, probably while still alive, and screaming if he could catch enough breath to do so. And two things more near the top of my momentary window. The first was a hat,
also furry with patches of that black-gray moss. It had grown all around the brim and also in the crease of the crown. It wasn't exactly what we wear now, that hat. The uniform has changed some since the 1970s, but it was a PSP Stetson, all right. The big hat. It hadn't blown away because someone or something had driven a splintery wooden stake down through it to hold it in place. As if Ennis Rafferty's killer had been afraid of the alien intruder even after the intruder's death and had staked the most striking item of his clothing to make sure he wouldn't rise and walk the night like a hungry vampire. Near the hat, rusty and almost hidden by scrub grass, was his sidearm. Not the Beretta auto we carry now, but the Ruger, the kind George Morgan had used. Had Ennis also used his to commit suicide? Or had he seen something coming and died firing his weapon at it? Had it even been fired at all? There was no way to tell, and before I could look more closely, Arky had screamed at Steph to help him, and I'd been yanked backward with Ned hanging in my arms like a big doll. I saw no more. But one question at least was answered. They'd gone there, all right. Ennis Rafferty and Brian Lippi both. Wherever there was. I got up from the bench and walked over to the shed a final time. And there it was, midnight blue and not quite right, casting a shadow just as if it were sane. "Oil's fine," the man in the black coat had told Radley Broach. And then he was gone, leaving behind this weird steel calling card. At some point during the last listless light storm, the trunk had shut itself again. About a dozen dead bugs lay scattered on the floor. We'd clean them up tomorrow. No sense saving them or photographing them or any of that. We no longer bothered. A couple of guys would burn them in the incinerator out back. I would delegate this job. Delegating jobs is also part of what sitting in the big chair is about, and you get to like it. Hand this one the shit and that one the sweets. Can they complain? No. Can they put it on their TS list and hand it to the chaplain? Yes, for all the good it does. "I'll outweight you," I said to the thing in the shed. "We can do that." It only sat there on its white walls, and far down in my head, the pulse whispered, "Maybe, and maybe not."